Well, the Labor Party signed off the agreement in July last year after 12 rounds of negotiations between 2018 and 2022. On the free trade agreement with Europe, opposition leader Chris Hipkins joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it must be nice for you to see this coming, getting across the line, and early, in fact, too.
Yeah, it's a pretty exciting day for New Zealand, I think. I mean, it opens up such a huge, you know, range of opportunities for our exporters. If, you know, if we take our beef exports, for example, we could see beef exports to the European Union treble. We could be supplying 60% of the butter that gets imported into the EU. We could be supplying that under this agreement. So that's just two of the examples. You know, there's a huge range of opportunities that open up for New Zealand exporters from this agreement. And, of course, we're very proud of the UK free trade agreement as well, which we see sitting alongside it, and which just opens up that part of the world for New Zealand exporters in a way that we haven't seen for several generations.
Just finally on this, it is a different world. Do you think it's going to be harder in future for the current government and future governments to do these sorts of bilateral deals? Does New Zealand need to think differently about this? Already it is, arguably, in that it is not so preoccupied perhaps with dairy and beef as it has been in the past, and that is a big barrier to doing a deal, say, with India. What's your sense about the level of urgency and direction for free trade, bilateral free trade agreements?
I think bilateral free trade agreements are likely to get harder when we look at kind of who's left, who we could do deals with. But the potential for multilateral free trade agreements, such as the CPTPP, for example, I think there's more opportunity to expand market access to New Zealand goods through those kind of agreements, and we should continue to actively, you know, explore and support international discussions around, you know, where those opportunities might exist.
All right, let's talk about MPs' pay rises. Your view on this, is it something that you should be getting together with the government on in some sort of bipartisan approach and intervening and blocking?
Look, I think it's terrible timing, but the reality is I think MPs should stay out of the process. I think every example of where we've meddled in the process as a parliament in the past has led to actually worse outcomes rather than better outcomes. So we should leave it to the Remuneration Authority. I think I understand New Zealanders' frustration at this, and they'll look at this and they'll think, hey, that's a bit unfair given the challenges that they're facing at the moment. But actually, it's the challenges that they're facing that we should be focused on. You know, this government are not doing enough to help New Zealanders with the cost of living. They're not doing enough to grow New Zealanders' incomes, and their priorities are wrong. You know, they put $2.9 billion into tax cuts for landlords rather than cost of living support for New Zealanders.
So you are defending that pay rise in a sense, because, and I'm interested in that, because the Taxpayers Union was on this morning, Jordan Williams, saying that the government is effectively borrowing $70 million a week at the moment. It does have a structural deficit that it has to fund, at the same time as paying its MPs more, at the same time as the government, and your government too was looking at making it to some cuts, not as extensive, obviously, in the public service. So how is that justified?
Well, I think we have to focus on getting the government books back into surplus. Now's not the time to be doing billions and billions of dollars worth of tax cuts.
No, how is the MP's pay rise justified at this time, given all those factors?
Well, it's never a good time for MPs' pay rises, and you know, I think that's one of the reasons that we should keep out of it. I'm not going to justify it. I think that's the job of the Remuneration Authority.
Now, your pay as for the opposition leader is being reduced slightly, still around that. What I think it's going up to over 300,000, isn't it? But by no means as much as the other positions, and this is because of the changing nature of the opposition leader, apparently, that there are other minor parties who play more of a role now as well. Do you accept that?
I don't agree with the Remuneration Authority's analysis, but I don't necessarily disagree with the outcome. I think I'm a well-paid New Zealander. I'm not asking for a bigger pay rise. I'm not asking for any pay rise at all, to be frank. I don't think their logic is correct. I think, you know, the reality is under MMP, there are still really only two potential prime ministers, the leader of the country, the prime minister, or the leader of the opposition. But look, I'm not asking for more money. I don't agree with their logic. I don't have a problem with that.
But you accept that you, as the opposition leader, the role, the, you know, you have a role to play, that you should be paid the same as a cabinet minister?
that's been the previous benchmark. If they'd continued with that, I would have been fine with that. The fact that they're not, I think that's really a decision for them. As I said, we stay out of these things. We stay out of them when it's to our advantage. We stay out of them when it's to our disadvantage.
The Prime Minister's signalled he'll give his extra money to charity. What will you do with your pay bump?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a regular contributor to charitable causes, and I intend to continue to be so. You know, I think those of us who are on high incomes, we should properly pay our fair share of tax, and I do that. But we should also make sure that we're contributing to the society around us, and I do that, and I'll continue to do that.
Thank you for your time. That is the Opposition Leader, Chris Hipkins.